Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling, brought to you by Spirit of Truth Ministry. Rick brings a unique perspective and insight into the study of Scripture, prophecy, and the words of Jesus Christ. Join us now in our search for truth.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's show on The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling. My name is Dennis Neufeld, and I am here with our study group that includes Suzette, Larry, and, of course, Rick. And we are delighted that you are here on this October 31, 2015. We are going to get started here in just a moment, but before we do that, I will call your attention to our chat room, where I have posted our links, as I always do, to our websites. The first link that you see is linked to our WordPress website, and the second one is linked to our original website. You can go to both of these places for some really interesting reading and interesting information, and go ahead.
Do those posting those websites in the chat room, they're not maintained for archival listeners, are they?
No.
That if information disappears, so.
But no, but the WordPress website is on our.
Okay, as long as they have something they can
look at.
Yeah,
it is on our page. Yeah. It is on our blog page.
Yeah, it's on the main page, I think, where the grand plan is.
Right.
Yeah. And it'll give you a list of the program dates that you can click on, and it'll give you the...
You can listen to that specific date there on our WordPress website.
Right, exactly. So, there's that. We also want to encourage you today, of all days, to be very, very safe. And I don't believe there's any of us here in this room that actually celebrates today's quote-unquote holiday, but we are all, how would you put it, we are all, you can't get away from it. It is pervasive in our society. And
so why fight it?
Well, we fight it the best that we can, but it just shows you that there is a force in the world that is anti-God, anti-Christ. And if you choose to, you can fight that, you can go against that, and actually make a good testimony.
It is in John 18:37 says, if you were of the truth or already of the truth, that holiday doesn't really appeal to you in any way.
That's true. So let's get started with prayer. Father in heaven, thank you for granting us peace and joy, safety today as we study, as we learn the truth from the mouth of Jesus Christ, from the words of God in the Old Testament, and from the guiding, leading, and the power of the Holy Spirit to change our hearts by the words that we hear. I thank you for doing this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Rick. Good morning, Suzette. And good morning, Larry. And good morning to you all out there in Blog Talk Radio land. And by the way, where else this is heard too, we are also on iTunes?
Yeah.
It gets posted on iTunes and all of that stuff. So there you go.
It's a lot going on. Been sharing some things with my friends here about indicators that are strongly indicating a time.
When we are in time.
when and where we are in time. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that and share some of the information with you. But first, I want to share something that I shared with my friends and relative here.
That was just a little too carefully worded there.
Well, you know, Suzette, I've known all of my life.
Forever.
And she doesn't change much. She just strengthens her character.
Thank you. I like that.
People just call me a character anyway, so
yeah,
you don't need to strengthen that part of it.
Suzette has purchased two vehicles from me, and both of them are red.
Yes, Cindy. Wonderful.
And I'm glad she feels that way about it, because I, you know, was hoping. Anyway, what I wanted to start out with is, very briefly, because it's not going to be about Paul, but I want to say this briefly. Paul presents a an, I don't want to call it an idea, because for Paul it's not an idea. For Paul it's a fact. This is a fact. Paul says it was told to the fathers and to the prophets of old, and it was a promise. And a promise was made that through the seed of Abraham, and he says it's one seed, not many seeds, even though that word, the Greek word that he uses for seed, is plural, never is singular. Paul used it in the plural context a little earlier in his letter, and then he uses it and stresses that it is one seed, meaning one, when he knows good and well that that word is plural. That God had waited until the seed came. And that seed, he says, is Jesus. And that through that seed, Gentiles would be included along with the Jews. And what God did was he gave the law to Israel so that Israel could demonstrate that you cannot achieve righteousness through keeping the law. It's impossible because of your evil flesh. Now, I would argue that very strongly on both sides. First, I would say that Daniel exemplified a righteous person who was righteous by keeping the law, by keeping the covenants. He included himself in God's kingdom, and in his prayer, he acknowledged that the kingdom, we, which he did not separate himself from, did not keep your covenant of love. And he's very clear about that. But I don't know that anyone would argue with me, although they might suggest, that Daniel kept the covenant. Daniel was faithful in the commandments, commandment keeping. In fact, that first account where King Nebuchadnezzar had a dream vision and wanted to know what it meant, because I guess that he was told that it had certain meaning and that he needed to find out for himself what the meaning of the dream was. I don't know. That's my own speculation, I guess, if you will. And so, of course, he asked his magicians, his quote-unquote wise men, the Chaldeans, the conjurers, the ones that have a connection to the spiritual realm.
The wise guys.
Where dreams come from, as Nebuchadnezzar believed. And, you know, that not a one of those frauds could tell him what his dream was. In fact, they got very perturbed, to put it lightly, that he wouldn't tell them the dream, because how would they be able to tell him what his dream meant if he didn't tell them what his dream was? And so he said, all right, you frauds, you're all going to be put to death. And that incidentally included Daniel, who hadn't even been there. But because he was in the group of the king's counselors and wise men, he was going to receive the death penalty just as they were.
It was a case of being in the wrong place at the right time.
And so when the captain of the group, the guard, said, Daniel, you guys, you're all going to be put to death. And Daniel says, well, what did we do? And so he told him, and Daniel says, you know, let me pray to my God. I know that if my God is pleased to give me the dream and its interpretation, I'd give it to the king. Just tell the king to wait and let me pray. So, you know, that all happened. There is no doubt in my mind that Daniel, in his life, proved Paul's assumption a lie. Now, Paul doesn't present it as an assumption. Paul presents it as a fact.
Yeah.
But Daniel, in his life, proves Paul a liar. And I'm going to read from Jeremiah 16. And you tell me, if you think that God knew that it was impossible for any human, any person of sinful, evil flesh to keep the law that he had required them to keep, the covenant. I'm going to be reading verses 10 through 13. Jeremiah 16, 10 through 13. When you tell this people all these words and they ask you, why has Yahweh decreed this appalling disaster for us? What is our crime? Okay. Now, do you notice something here? They recognize that what God is going to do to them is a judgment for a crime that was committed. So they want to know, what did we do? What sin have we committed against Yahweh our God? Then you are to answer. It is because your ancestors abandoned me. It is Yahweh who speaks. And followed alien gods, ancient aliens, extraterrestrials, and served and worshipped them. They abandoned me, and look at this, and did not keep my law. Do you think that God was aware that, like Paul is definitely aware, that it is impossible for anyone to keep his law? His law is just too hard, and that in order for someone to be righteous, they have to be given the gift of righteousness, because not only is it impossible for them to be righteous through their own works by keeping his law, but somehow or another, it is the highest sin to even try to keep his law, to be righteous. So it doesn't get more sinful than for someone to believe that they can obey God's law and be righteous. Because your own righteousness is as filthy rags. I mean, how blatantly blasphemous can one be? And then God goes on to say about them. Now he talked about their fathers, and now he's talking about these who are alive. And you, for your part, have behaved even worse than your ancestors. Look, each of you follows the dictates of his hardened, wicked heart and will not listen to me. And so I am going to eject you from this land into a country unknown to you and to your ancestors. There you will serve alien gods day and night. For I shall show you no more favor. We are living in the time of the end of the age. We are at the point where Israel and where Judah, each one and separately, came to their end. God pronounced judgment upon them, and they said, "Why? Why are you doing this to us? This is so out of character. This is not the actions of a wonderful, loving, compassionate God. These are the actions of a tyrannical,
petulant,
evil emperor."
Just a thought on that term, end of the age. We've lived in a culture and a religion that has used that term in a kind of a broad, general sense, and I've always thought they were living in it. And so it's been pretty well fuzzed out, given the amount of time that has passed since it was first understood that way. But what we're trying to say here is we are at a point in time in the end of the age where it's absolutely necessary and mandatory that you get out the instruction manual and learn all aspects of it, or you're useless and irrelevant to God.
And you're exactly right, Larry. And what I would say is that God didn't say he was waiting till the beginning of a new age.
Mm-mm.
He said that this would happen at the end of the old age. We are in the end of the old age, which is, now this is, I don't want you to take this wrong, but we are in the age of Pisces. And Pisces is coming to an end. Now, what do I mean by that? I'm not talking in astrological terms. I'm talking in astronomical terms. Ages are determined just like a day, as is a day determined, as is a week, a month, a year. For an age is the sun moves through the, I'll say zodiac, but don't take it wrong, the signs in the heavens. It's like a clock. And the sun moves counterclockwise as it's viewed on the spring equinox. It moves a degree. The age began right around the beginning of the Common Era. Some would say zero, well, there wasn't zero. Some would say 1 AD or 1 CE. I'm not saying that's when the age began, but it began around that time. And it has been going for the last 2,000 years, and it is now nearing an end, and we are about to enter the age of Aquarius. So if you note that clockwise, Aquarius comes before Pisces, but counterclockwise, Pisces comes before Aquarius. The sun is nearing the end of the Piscean age and about ready to enter the Aquarian age. Now, whether that is the age that God was talking about or not, God does use astronomical time when he talks about days and weeks and months and years.
On the Wednesday day of creation, God set all of the clocks in motion from zero. And it has been precessing since then.
And also,
not processing, precessing.
When you read about the fourth day of creation, incidentally, in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 14, God said, "Let there be lights in the vault of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them indicate festivals." What indicated the festivals? What was it that determined the festivals?
The moon.
The moon. Months. So let them indicate the months, the days, and the years. Let them be lights in the vault of the heaven to shine on the earth, and so it was. God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the smaller light to govern the night. And the stars he made also. But the stars would have already been there, as was the earth and the sun. I mean, he didn't just create the earth on day one and then create the sun on day four. God set them in the vault of heaven to shine on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to divide light from darkness. God saw that it was good. Evening came and morning came, the fourth day. So these great lights and the stars were used to keep time.
It's a clock.
So that you would know when a day began and ended, when a week began and ended, when a month began and ended, and when a year began and ended. And using the stars and the sun from the vantage point of the earth, you would know when an age began and ended. So, whether or not the end of the age was meant to be understood as the end of the Piscean age, it is interesting that the Anointed One of God was born right around the beginning of the Piscean Age. Now, I don't know how many of you have paid much attention to the heavenly heavens, universe situation. But a quick recap on how I understand what took place in the very beginning here on earth. After the creation, and incidentally, I do not think that on the sixth day of creation is when God made the earth man Adam. I think on the sixth day of creation, God created the nations, the ethnicities, and each ethnicity or nation, if you will, was created in a geographical location. And it could be, and I'm not saying that it is, but it could be that the various color differentiations of the ethnicities reflected the color of the earth from which they were taken. Now, I'm not saying that that is. I'm just saying it's a thought. God.
By the way, the word that is used there for man is Strong's H120 or Strong's 120, Au Dam. It does mean ruddy, but it means a human being, an individual, or the species, mankind.
Mankind.
Yeah. Mankind. And the, again, the primary meaning of it here is mankind.
And in Genesis 2, we have God making the man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
And after he formed the man and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, he took the man from where he had been created and he placed him into a garden that he had planted. Mm-hmm. So there is a difference, and the difference has been noted by several, particularly scientists, who indicate that Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 are not describing the same thing.
God in Genesis 1 created mankind. In Genesis 2, he formed a man. The word formed is totally different.
And gave him a communicating spirit.
And gave him a communicating spirit.
And what that difference is that when God made mankind during creation, the creation week, mankind was created without knowledge of what they're supposed to do. I mean, they could see, they could hear, they could speak, they could breathe. But they didn't know how to build a house. They didn't know what a house was. They didn't know how to plant crops. They didn't know what crops were. I mean, this was knowledge that they needed to learn. And God didn't just leave them here to figure it out for themselves. He sent them teachers. And you can go back into the ancient records and you can see the people talk about the teachers that came down from the heavens. And these teachers that came down from the heavens decided to take the earth for themselves. And their leader was Satan, whose name at the time was Lucifer, the light bringer. He brought the light, the truth, the light of knowledge, and he taught the people. Well, when God formed Adam, Adam also needed to learn. But God wasn't going to have the rebels teaching Adam, so God taught Adam himself. And that's why Adam was given a communicating spirit to be able to communicate
and
with God face to face.
God removed Adam from where God had created him in the world and removed him to a protected environment where the watchers, these teachers who God had sent, who had usurped his authority, could not get to him because he was protected.
Well,
sort of.
Well, he was. And if he had been obedient...
So how did the ancient serpent get in there, by the way?
God had to let the ancient serpent in.
Okay, so then he didn't keep him out.
No, I didn't say he kept him out. I said he protected him. God set up a protection for Adam, that if Adam and Eve had obeyed, they would have remained protected.
From what?
From the leader of the watchers.
As long as they were obedient.
That's what I said. As long as they obeyed.
As long as, well, I want that to be clear. Yeah. As long as they were obedient, God was with them.
Yep.
So you're saying blessings are associated with obedience and disobedience is associated with curses?
So tell me, are we to say that God, in effect, set the man and the woman up when he forbade them from eating from that tree? Did he set them up to fail? Because as Paul would have us believe, they had a body of flesh. A body of flesh is inferior. It is corrupt. It came from the earth, the dust of the earth. So your flesh is corrupt. It is of this world. This is what Paul teaches. So, God giving Adam a body of flesh and the woman who came from his flesh, a body of flesh, were incapable of obeying God, according to Paul. And so God then becomes responsible for forbidding them from eating from a tree, which he knew full well they could not do. That just their own inferior, corrupt flesh that God himself gave them, they had a propensity to disobey. They could not help themselves.
All right, I'm going to give you a little insight, and I know Don is listening to this, and he's a teacher. I'm a teacher, and I give tests. Do I give tests knowing that my students will fail them? Do I make my tests not just so hard, but I teach music. So do I go out and I find a physical science textbook and I put together 100 questions on physical science and give it to my music class? Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, I make sure that when I give quizzes, I make sure that my students know exactly what they have to understand in order for them to not just pass the test, but to completely understand the material in it. That is good teaching. God is a good teacher. He is the perfect teacher. So when people do say, and you're saying, you're expressing something, Rick, that you have heard people say, which is based in erroneous data. It's the data that perspective comes from is,
well, it's false data.
It's false data. It's unsupportable. It's unsupported.
Well, it's supported by the one who's presenting the data.
Right, exactly. So it's important to know where the data comes from.
So, but the thing is, Dennis, you didn't create your students and make it impossible for them to deliver.
Which makes it even more ridiculous.
So, that's right. So yeah. What Paul is saying is that God set everyone up to do this. Now, we come here to the end of the age. Turn to Revelation chapter 13. Before we read this, I want to give you a little bit of background. There are many people, and among these many quote-unquote Christians, who are convinced that Revelation is nothing more than a description of the spiritual battle between good and evil. That as far as it being prophecy, it is not.
As a matter of fact, all it does is reveal the character of Jesus Christ. Everything in it is just it's a revelation of the character of Jesus and has no bearing on literal events at all. And we have heard this from our pulpit at the church that we used to go to.
And we do every once in a while.
We do every once in a while.
Or I do every once in a while. Where does God dwell? Anybody have any idea? What place or area does God call home?
Well, in the heavens.
Yeah. In the heavens.
In the heavens. But I happened, just like you, and independently of you, I came to this same conclusion. I believe that there is an identifiable location.
That God lives on some type of a... I'm only going to say terra firma because that's how we understand our earth. But in other words, God lives on something solid. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just live out in the ether and blackness of space where we just imagine in our own minds God out there in a place, in a palace, sitting on a throne. Because we read about that, but obviously what we're reading is not the truth. Literally, it is that God is more of an etherical idea that is out there, a consciousness, and all of this is just built up so that we can kind of put it into perspective. Absolutely not. God lives on a planet. And you can ask, if you could, any of the ancients, and I'm talking about antediluvian ancients, not those who lived during the time or just before the flood, but those who lived thousands of years before the flood. Ask them, did they have teachers? You can go to the Mayans, the Aztecs, the Egyptians, the Sumerians, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Norse. You can go to all of the ancient cultures, and they will all tell you from their preserved ancient records that they had teachers that came from the heavens. And they came down here and taught each nation what they needed to know to build houses, to plant crops, to build transportation, to do everything they needed to do, to work out math problems. And they taught them the sciences. All cultures all said that they had teachers that came from the heavens. Now, these teachers said they came from a planet, a certain planet with the name of Nibiru or Nibiru, however you want to, the planet of the crossing, because it crossed the plane of the ecliptic, the equatorial plane of the sun. And you can look on the ancient depictions of star maps and you can see this planet depicted. Now, if they came from that planet, then who else would be dwelling on that planet? Well, I would say that it would have to be God, the true God, because he's the one who sent them down here to teach mankind what they needed to know to be able to live and to accomplish the purpose for which God created them.
Right.
Now, this planet is in its own solar system, from what I understand. And I have researched this quite thoroughly, as best I can. It's in its own solar system, which revolves around a sun. Now, when I say it's in its own solar system, I'm going to qualify that. The solar system in which that planet is orbiting a sun, which is a brown dwarf, and it's a twin binary sun to our sun. So that solar system that orbits that sun, that whole thing orbits our sun. And that orbit is 3,600 years, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
To complete one orbital path around our sun. Now, from what I understand, both our sun and that sun orbit each other. But because our sun is so much more massive than that sun, which is a brown dwarf, and its mass is almost gone, fusion has ceased to take place in its core, is what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the sun has a name, I guess, from ancient times. It's called Nemesis. And Nemesis is surrounded by a dust cloud, which is iron oxide. So it has a reddish hue. It is also extremely hot, as you would imagine.
Hmm.
Before we read Revelation 13, I want to read Revelation 8. And not the whole chapter, but we'll turn to 8, because I want to read about the first trumpet. So we'll turn to Revelation 8, start with verse 2. Next I saw seven trumpets being given to the seven angels who stand in the presence of God. Another angel who had a golden censer came and stood at the altar. A large quantity of incense was given to him to offer with the prayers of all the saints on the golden altar that stood in front of the throne. And so from the angel's hand the smoke of the incense went up in the presence of God, and with it the prayers of the saints. Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, which he then threw down to the earth. Immediately there came peals of thunder, flashes of lightning, and the earth shook. Now, what is being described here is very interesting, because all of these things are described as happening when Nibiru shows up. Because of the strong gravitational pull between our sun and that sun, between that planet and there's two other planets from what I understand, and two moons. So there's two planets in that system which have one moon each, and then Nibiru, which does not have a moon. When it comes close to Earth, we live in an electric universe. There is no such thing as the vacuum of space. Space is electric, magnetic. And when you bring two magnetic fields together or close together, what do you get? Electromagnets. You get electrical discharge. So what is that called?
Lightning.
Lightning. So we read, when the censer was cast to the earth, there came peals of thunder, flashes of lightning, and the earth shook. Guess what kind of earthquake you would get when the pole of earth, like the North Pole, is attracted to the South Pole, if you will, of another planet. That's quite close by. The earth will wobble, kind of like a drunk man. That is also a description. Not here, but in another part of Revelation. And an earthquake. Now, the first trumpet, which is verse 7, the first blew his trumpet, and with that, hail on fire. Now, it says hail and fire, but what it is describing is flaming hail. Flaming hail mixed with blood. And what color is blood, by the way?
Red.
What color would iron oxide look like?
Yeah.
It would look like blood, wouldn't
right.
it? Mm-hmm. Iron oxide particles coming through our atmosphere that are sun surface temperature, basically. What do you think they would do?
It would actually oxidize the atmosphere.
They would be flaming.
Right.
Flaming particles of hail, really hot, and it looks like blood. There you go. Now, I'm not saying that that is what is it is, and that is what is going to happen. What I'm saying is that when we look at this system coming in, it can explain what the first trumpet is explaining. Iron oxide dust coming through our atmosphere looks like flaming hail mixed with blood.
Hmm.
Either way, whether it is what you're seeing in it or not, it's a wake-up call.
And it burns up a third of the earth, a third of the trees, and every blade of grass. I found a video that was uploaded by someone that I have seen over the past few years. I believe it was 2010 when I first came across a video from this particular person who shared a news feed from a television station in Sacramento, California, that was videoed on February, I think it was the 23rd, 2014. Their helicopter, which they use for aerial views of crime scene, car chases, and traffic reports, had noticed something in the pre-dawn sky they could not explain. And as this television news came on, I think it came back from the break, what you see is a planet that is being eclipsed by some other planet. They could not explain it. Now, what I mean by they... They had their weatherman, who I guess is their resident astronomer also, or their resident scientist, and they were asking him. What ultimately it turned out, and of course they weren't going to say, but this individual who posted this video went through a very articulate, cogent, and understandable explanation of what was what you were seeing in that video. And it's the only explanation that would have make any sense in light of what the camera was showing. It was a planet on the backside of the sun that was being eclipsed by a planet on the front side of the sun. Now, what I mean by front side is from the perspective of Earth. So from Earth, a planet on the front side of the sun would have its dark side toward Earth. A planet on the back side of the sun would be like a full moon is. It would be showing a reflection from the sun, so we would see a light or bright reflection from this planet. The fact that this planet is being eclipsed by another planet would mean that the planet eclipsing it would be between Earth and this other planet. The only explanation for this is that the planet that was being eclipsed was not any planet in our solar system orbiting our sun. And so, the only explanation is that this planet is Nibiru. The only explanation. It's there for all of you to see. It is right there. That's why we've had so many asteroids. That's why we've had new comets with letters and numbers as their name, because they've never been seen before. It's also interesting that there is a comet that came a year or two ago, Elenin. It disintegrated and went into the sun. Elenin is spelled E-L-E-N-I-N. Do you know what an E-L-E is? Extinction level event.
Right.
ELE is extinction level event. An asteroid coming headed toward the Earth, as you see in so many disaster movies, is a ELE.
And that came to light in, what was it?
Deep Impact or
Deep
Impact,
like that. Tia Leone. And several other major people, and she, you know, everybody thought it was Ellie, but it's ELE, and extinction level event.
Now, what about NIN? Nibiru is nearing. Elenin. Extinction level event, Nibiru is nearing. Why do you think they have a seed vault in Salavabad, Norway? And who are they? See, who are they? Who is putting up the money for all this? I don't know any government right now that has the money that could maintain a monstrosity like that, but obviously there's a very powerful, wealthy group that thinks they need to have this.
Are we introducing Revelation 13?
We are. We are, but of course we're running out of time, but we are. And I've also heard, but I cannot offer, I can offer evidence, but it's not evidence that's absolutely, if you don't want to believe it, it's not evidence that you can say, oh, well, and then, you know. But I talked a few weeks ago. I didn't talk about it. I mentioned it. Dumb, which I think is a quite appropriate name. A dumb. D-U-M-B. Do you know what that stands for?
Stupid.
Deep Underground Military Base. In the sixth seal, we'll read that real quick, and then I'm going to read Revelation 13. The sixth seal, it's Revelation 6 and verse 12, starting verse 12. In my vision, when he broke the sixth seal, there was a violent earthquake, and the sun went as black as coarse sackcloth. The moon turned as red as blood all over, and the stars of the sky fell on the earth like figs dropping from a fig tree when the high wind shakes it. The sky disappeared like a scroll rolling up, and all the mountains and islands were shaken from their places. than all the earthly rulers, the governors and the commanders, the rich people and men of influence, the whole population and slaves and citizens took to the mountains to hide in caves. O-D-U-M-B. That's what I have to say about that. Why do they do that?
They're scared.
They said to the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the one who sits on the throne, from the anger of the Lamb. For the great day of his anger has come, and who can survive it? In the last 4 minutes that we have, I want to say this. You're not hearing about Nibiru in the mainstream media because guess what? They don't want panic on their hands. They don't want people who really don't know any better to know that catastrophe is on the doorstep and there's not anything they can do about it. They're taking care of themselves, but there's not anything they can do about it. What do you think would happen if the populace knew that catastrophe was ready to strike?
Oh, man, panic would set in.
They'd have their guns out, they would have their stores of food, and they would be setting up fortresses.
Yep.
So the world needs to get its act together so they can keep control on this, and they are taking steps where the countries and so on are jockeying for positions of power to ultimately rule in a world government. This is not something I'm making up. You can go to the news. They talk about world government.
Yes.
They say world government is coming. We're going to get a world currency. We're going to have a world government with world rulers. They are moving people into various places where all these refugees are coming. That's it. The world is taking steps. If you care to pay attention to what is going on, the world is taking steps to make the transition to a world government. Revelation 13, starting with verse 1. Then I saw a beast emerge from the sea. It had 7 heads and 10 horns, with a coronet on each of its 10 horns. That's a crown. And its heads were marked with blasphemous titles. I saw that the beast was like a leopard, with paws like a bear and a mouth like a lion. The dragon, who is the ancient serpent of old, the devil and Satan, had handed over to it his own power and his throne and his worldwide authority. My friends, we are here. And all is needed is one view of Nibiru. My understanding that Nibiru is on the back side of the sun. That's why you can't see it right now. That's why all the sunspots disappear when they come into an earth-facing position. I believe because the magnetic pull is to the back side of the sun where all the activity seems to be taking place. And the limb. When that comes around the sun, then we are going to see some things that have not been seen for a very, very, very long time.
And some things that have never been seen ever. Yeah. Go ahead.
I don't know if we have enough time, but...
Half a minute.
Our understanding here is not the only crafty story out there available on the internet and YouTube. I've seen some stuff from rapture groups and different things, and I'm not familiar enough to describe it very well, but there are biblical-based copy and paste crafty stories out there available. The last time a major crafty story was created and presented to the world was Revelation 2. I mean, Genesis 2.
Genesis 2.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next Friday for another edition of The Revelation of Jesus, and Saturday, Sabbath, for another edition of Saturday for Revelation of Jesus and Friday for Bible on Trial. So long for now.